Welcome to Overcrest. I'm Chris.
And I'm Jake.
Had a fun episode for you guys today. Like I said, it's a little bit of a gamble. I'm not sure. It's a little bit of a gamble.
I see what you're doing there. So, Chris, I was a little inspired by this because as you and I'm sure most of our audience knows, this year, Formula One will be coming to Las Vegas.
Yes, and I've looked at like tickets or how to go or
so. Yeah, Let's here. First of all, let's just play the announcement that they're going to be in Vegas. I like to add a little pizzazz to these, so that's clip one here.
All right, let's do it.
Las Vegas is the home of live entertainment and sports, and our announcement here tonight showcases the convergence of both. I'm beyond thrilled to be with all of you tonight in the celebration and special announcement that Formula One Racing is coming to Las Vegas.
Okay.
So
I'm imagining this girl, I'm imagining as the Las Vegas girl reading this. Like the girl that's
she was very, I'm sure she was.
But you know the girls that are when you're walking down the Vegas Strip and there's the girls wearing almost nothing? Uh-huh. And they're like they'll take your picture with them.
Okay.
You have no idea what I'm talking about?
No.
Okay.
So no, I haven't actually spent any time in Vegas on the Strip.
Never.
No.
Wow. Okay. So when you're in Vegas and you're walking down the Strip, there's all kinds of different people that want your money. Okay.
Yes, like
Vegas,
I believe it.
the entire thing with Vegas is that it is built to extract money from you.
Have you been to Hollywood Boulevard, where it's like all the street performers and like the stupid people handing out stuff? I imagine it's very similar to that.
I have not. But so you're walking around, there's different types of people trying to get your money there. There are street performers, but there's also these chicks that are like nearly naked. They're just wearing like skimpy outfits and they're just standing there. There's always two of them. They're like, hey, how's it going? Oh, and they want you to take a picture and then they go, give me money. It's like bellhop, but for delivery of sexual photos instead of luggage.
Rich. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
No, that makes perfect sense.
So that's what I'm imagining this woman is like. She's one of those ladies being like, welcome to Las Vegas.
No, she was a little more professional broadcaster.
I can't believe you've never been to Las Vegas.
I've been through it.
Well,
but I haven't like stayed
sure
on the
counts.
Strip.
I'm
no,
sure
it
that
doesn't.
That
all right, but I mean, I do want to go to this race. It's going to be an amazing spectacle. It's 3.8 miles long.
Ain't gonna. We're not.
It's
going.
Actually. I know the track consists of racing on the streets, a la that of Monaco. Like they're shutting down the streets. The route will feature a straight traveling for over a mile on the famous Las Vegas Boulevard Strip itself, between the hotels and casinos, and alongside the Bellagio Fountain, with a total of 14 corners. And yeah, we wanted to attend, but as we now know, it's exorbitantly expensive, with the entry fee alone being like several thousands of dollars.
Yeah. So, I mean, we could get a press pass to go.
We could.
But we still can't afford to
stay
in the hotels.
Which right. Because like, everything's going to be exactly
out of control because it's an international thing. So it's an international
It is interesting,
town.
Though. So the Vegas circuit is expected to stay on the F1 calendar for the foreseeable future. The FIA has signed a 3-year contract with the city, but the city itself has secured permits to shut down the streets for the event for the next decade. So maybe we can afford it in future years.
Yeah, when it's not such a high ticket, hot, new, fancy thing.
Exactly. Yeah, I can't wait to watch it and wish we were going. It's set to be an absolutely amazing event.
Yeah,
but
we'd
here's
be in a tent
thing,
in the desert, I think, would be the way that we would be able to go.
We could car camp it right there on the Strip.
Yeah, there you go.
It's probably.
Hey, we could take the van. We could take the van.
Yes. Oh.
You snore. You'd have to sleep on the roof.
Okay. I'd do it like a rooftop tent situation.
Nope, just the roof.
Just wide open.
Under the
roof. Well, I wouldn't be worried about being attacked by wolves or cows.
Like in Utah.
So that's better.
For anybody that doesn't remember, doesn't know, Jake snores so loud. Like, he is the loudest snorer in existence.
That's
ever.
Not true.
No.
Because
that
Colin snores louder than me, by the way.
Yeah, well, I haven't slept with near
him.
It's
been a dueling snorer.
Yeah, well, you're awful. And we were in a little cabin in Utah, and it got
so
bad.
Yeah, and you're also
that
awful for this, for doing this.
For doing this? Yeah. It's my fault that you snore so loud that I can't sleep.
Yes.
Yes. So he slept out on the porch, on the ground.
Which you were like worried that there was going to be wild wolves roaming around or coyotes or, mountain lion.
Not
but
worried
then I realized
enough,
after
apparently.
The fact that it was all open cattle range. So more likely than anything, I'd just wake up to like Bessie the cow licking my face.
Yeah, likely. Which,
whatever. So anyways, I guess F1's coming. But here's the thing. This isn't the first time that Formula One has raced in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. For the 1981 and 82 seasons, the final race was held at what was known as the Caesars Palace Grand Prix. And if you hadn't heard of this, I'm really not surprised. It was unarguably a complete and utter failure.
Disaster.
Strap in.
Absolute disaster.
This story leads down some crazy turns with some nefarious and shady characters in the background.
Chicane of a story?
It's there's many chicanes after another. Yeah. And I, you know, a lot of this research came from, there's an author who wrote a couple different books about this. And I'm going to read the titles of these books because I also want to try to get the author on this next week. I think it'd be really good. So I just want to give a shout out to the research that was done. But the names of the books, just to give you a taste of what's coming up, is Caesar's Palace Grand Prix, Las Vegas, Organized Crime and the Pinnacle of Motorsport, and Stardust International Raceway, Motorsport Meets the Mob in Vegas.
I love it.
Yes.
So have you seen Casino?
I've seen parts of it.
Come on, dude. You are so cold.
Here's the thing.
You're so culturally inept.
Here's the thing. Do you think my wife would like to watch that movie?
Who gives a shit? Who cares?
I'm not going to watch it alone.
Well, she should.
I have better things to do with my time than that.
Do you think she ever has that same feeling? Like, will Jake like this movie? Will he like it? She goes, no, I want to watch this movie. You're watching it with me.
Usually I just go in the garage then and get something actually productive done. So I don't know.
Dude, you got to like, I don't know.
I got to expand my repertoire.
If you can't enjoy a movie alone, it's probably not a good movie.
Yeah, I just don't. I mean, yeah, I could enjoy it alone. I just don't want to. I don't know.
Why? It's just, can't you relax?
Have you gone to theaters by yourself?
Yes.
See, I've never done that.
Yeah, it's fine. It's nice, actually.
I realize it's not like a social environment. So it's like the bringing people to a theater with you is a strange concept to begin with.
Yeah.
But no, I've never done that either. So regardless, you know what you will enjoy, though, here, Chris? And I'm not talking about our sponsor yet.
Hold on.
What? Okay.
The movie Casino, there's a couple guys in this movie. I can't remember their names, but the two main characters, I'm imagining around this. So what time frame is this?
This is leading into the 80s.
Okay, so it's leading into the 80s. Let me look and see when. You do your thing, and I'm going to look and see when Casino was made.
Well, here, while you do this, are you able to play clip two? Because there is a song that was released that is totally going to set the stage. And this, you're thinking 80s? This is it. So we'll just play this kind of in the background.
Okay.
This is F1 actually like commissioned this song to be played on broadcasts for Formula One coming to Las Vegas.
Cool. I click play and nothing's happening because Riverside
That's
is amazing. Can you just sing it?
The way we like all around the world today, we're coming to America.
Got it.
And all the way with the day. Really? You can't play it?
It won't go. Yeah, it will not play.
I'm so sad. Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah, sorry. No good.
Do I not get any of my media from here on out?
I have no idea, dude. I have no idea. This is
well,
tough.
Before we get into this failed Las Vegas track, we need to understand kind of what led up to it. So Formula One had...
Casino is 1973. So it's taking place in like the mid to late 70s, and it's Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci are the main characters. And so the thing is that the entire casino scene there is run by Jews. So the Jews own the hotels, the casinos, everything. And
was this in Vegas?
Yes. Yeah. So Sam Rothstein... Or no, it's, is it?
Is it? Is it?
He's okay. So it's all run by Italian mafia, and he's Jewish.
Yes,
that's what it's the opposite way.
Yeah,
and they won't let him do anything. But he eventually becomes like they kind of let him in, and he's so good at what he does. And then of course it all falls apart in this, and it's got Sharon Stone in it, who's just this like this crazy wife of Sam Rothstein. Oh, it's so good.
Is that the De Niro character?
Sam Rothstein, yes.
Rothstein.
Yeah, and then Joe Pesci's just like. Stabs a guy in the
just
pen.
Being
the pen.
Joe Pesci.
Oh,
yeah.
It's so great. It's so great. Yeah. So that's what I'm imagining when you say mob and mafia.
Vegas is huge ties with the mob since the 1940s.
Is it still?
It's probably not as much.
Yeah.
Probably can't be. It probably can't be. All right, you keep trying to play my song while it's
kind of rhyme right now.
Rewind.
Actually,
oh, okay, good.
I thought maybe we would play the trailer for Casino if you want, if it'll let us do that.
We can try that, but if we're failing to play a song, Chris.
Well, this is a little bit different. Let's try it. Let's see what we got. I'm going to see if we can.
You could just play the song on your desktop too, I believe.
No, I can't do that. That's not how any of this works. All right, okay. we're gonna watch the trailer for Casino to get a feel.
Is this the one where they basically smush the guy's head in a vice?
In a vice, yes. That is the
okay.
one.
Yep.
All right, here we go.
Do we have to give an explicit warning?
No, it's just
a
trailer.
I had it down so good that I ran paradise on Earth. I had one of the biggest casinos in Las Vegas to run. The Tangiers.
Yeah.
You know, if I did it, I'd have to run on my way.
Nobody's going to interfere with you running the casino. I guarantee it. Vicky, you're a guy. Make a lot of money for us. So keep a good eye on it.
All right. Look at this place. It's made of money. What do you think about me moving out here?
I just got to tell you, it's no joke out here. You got to keep a low profile. Right off the bat, they don't like guys like us.
So one thing that I like about this, as I pause it for a second, is I love the feel that they captured for Vegas. The cars, the lights, because it's a totally different thing than it is now. Now yeah. is like,
oh,
it's like a
that.
Technological marvel. Back then, run by dudes like Joe Pesci, different vibe.
Yeah.
You like your money a lot,
yes,
don't you?
Well, how about
that?
Yeah. I want to settle down. I want a family.
You got the wrong girl.
You'll be set up for the rest of your life.
You don't know me. What do you know me to 3 months?
They had it all. They ran the show. And it was paradise while it lasted.
Oh, good song.
They found a guy's head in the desert. That's no good.
We got a problem.
He doesn't listen to me. Maybe he should get lost for a while. Take a vacation.
Can't make it any clearer, Sam. I would just get out.
I tried to do everything for you, even though I knew deep down inside you would bury me.
I buried you. You buried yourself.
Anyway, it's a phenomenal movie. Martin Scorsese. I think this movie is better than Godfather or Goodfellas.
Okay,
we're gonna get some hate mail.
I'm
sure.
I'll watch it.
It's worth it. I think it's a great picture in time of what we're actually talking about.
Yeah, I think so for sure. Okay, so really, I don't have my song yet because I'm vibing to the world.
I deleted it. I'm gonna try and add it again.
We're coming to America. All right. So while you get that going, I'm gonna talk a little bit about what kind of led up.
Everywhere around the world.
Okay, why are we playing this?
Because this, you can turn it down, but this was like the song they played on broadcasts when F1 was coming to Formula or to Vegas.
Okay, so this was like the commercials?
This is the commercial, yeah. This is great.
It's a terrible song. Who's this, Neil Young or something?
No idea. No attribution whatsoever. we gotta play it. It's setting the stage, yeah. Okay, so. And it is kind of interesting because Formula One has always had kind of a tumultuous time.
Oh, it's Neil Diamond. It's Neil Diamond, of course.
Oh, that is not surprising at all. All right, you can turn it down.
It's only got like 10 seconds left. I'll let it play out. Today!
I think my rendition was pretty spot on.
Higher fidelity, that's for sure, for the crappiest clip in the world that you sent me. Got it.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Well, it's the 80s. What do you expect?
Well, I bet there's a version of that song that sounds better than whatever
that was. That was it. That was straight out of the recording studio. All right. So when you look at Formula One in America, it's always had a very tumultuous time. Like, it's never really gone well. When you look at the locations that F1 raced around the world, there's some storied places with longstanding histories of hosting the Grand Prix. Places like Monza, Monaco, Silverstone in the UK, Spa in Belgium, and Suzuka Circuit in Japan have hosted Formula One for decades.
Yeah,
just every year at a time. Yes. However, when you look at the races held here in the US, it's a laundry list of failed one or two year events. Sebring, hosted the Grand Prix only once in 1959. Riverside, California in 1960 was the same. There was even a single race held in Dallas in 1984, held on the public streets. Even Detroit, Phoenix, and Indianapolis had their shot at hosting a handful of Formula One races. But besides the modern kind of stalwarts on American soil, namely like the circuits of America now, today in Texas, there was only one U.S. venue that succeeded on hosting the Grand Prix for an extended amount of time, and that was Watkins Glen.
So now, I'm wondering if the issue is, like, we've seen a resurgence in Formula One here, even before Drive to Survive, right? We've seen,
yeah, I think you're right.
It's growing. And I'm wondering if that's because there's been a decline in NASCAR. Because in the last 20 years, NASCAR has definitely declined.
I honestly wonder if social media has a lot to do with it, because, you know, it never was a mainstay of like motorsport here.
Right.
And maybe now that it's more accessible everywhere, people are interested.
Yeah, you have more access to watch stuff.
Exactly.
That's international. Yeah.
Exactly. So Watkins Glen, Chris, do you know much about it? It's situated in upstate New York. It's a historic track that has hosted every major motorsport since it opened in the late 50s. Then, in 1961, just 6 weeks before the scheduled race, the track owner was informed that Formula One would hold their championship race at the track. So they have 6 weeks, and they're like, yep, we'll hold the final race.
What year is this?
61.
Okay, things are a little bit different. It's not like they had to do everything that they do now.
Yeah, but things also moved a little slower, right? You can't just shoot emails to all your vendors and be like, be there.
Yeah, I suppose.
I don't know. The race was actually an immediate success, though, with over 60,000 fans showing up. And for years, the Glen saw fans turning out in droves to witness the Formula One Grand Prix. But as the years passed, things became chaotic. The fans got absolutely rowdy. And that's, I mean, I just love the idea of like, okay, here's Formula One. It's great. It's been going on for decades, almost 100 years all over the world.
And, here's a bunch
and
of
then it comes to America.
Americans. Yeah.
So the infield camping zone at the Glen turned into mud pits and mosh pits where they lit cars on fire during the race.
That doesn't seem very Formula One.
No, it doesn't. Many international drivers like François Severt and Helmut Koenig were killed. Sever.
Yes. Got it.
Yes. This is exactly what I said. And Helmut Koenig were killed due to the unsafe layout of the track. Keep in mind,
what
like
was
it wasn't
about
designed
it? Oh, it wasn't
for
those speeds.
F1.
Yeah.
Yes, there was no like big runoff or sand traps. I mean, there were some gravel traps, but it wasn't what Formula One had been in other countries. And when aerodynamics and ground effects kind of were allowed the cars to reach higher and higher speeds, it was very clear that the track was lagging well behind on safety features. So the company that operated the track, because these are all businesses, of course, became cash straps. And in 1980, it pleaded that they be able to pay the Formula One sanctioning fee after the race took place. So usually, if you want Formula One to come race on your track and they're interested, you pay a big sanctioning fee. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. They don't rent the track from you. You pay to have the opportunity to have everyone come.
That makes sense.
But in 1980, they were so cash strapped that they were like, look, we love hosting it here. We've had a history of it here. We'll just pay you afterward. And in an odd moment of leniency, Bernie Ecclestone, the previous magnate of Formula One itself, allowed this concession. However, by the time the 1981 season started, Watkins Glen still hadn't paid its debt. So they still hadn't paid that. And combined with the track's inability to fund any necessary safety upgrades, Watkins Glen was in turmoil, and in August of that year, the track filed for bankruptcy. Now, Watkins Glen is still around today, I should note, but it completely restructured, and Formula One was just kind of done with them. So without a U.S. track to host the final round of the Grand Prix, organizers looked elsewhere. And Formula One was then, as it is still now today, interested in stirring up interest in attracting more U.S. fans. And as F1 has primarily always been a European sport of sorts,
this Watkins
really
Glen
like,
thing
where
kind
can
of
we
feels
have
like
this?
The story arc of Road America a little bit.
Do you think so?
Well, it's just kind of like you look at the events that are at Watkins Glen now. They have SCCA, HSR, which is vintage stuff, IMSA, NASCAR. you know.
And now it's just kind of dwindling.
Yeah. I mean, Road America has seen a huge resurgence. I've talked to those guys and they have a lot of people come to the events.
Yeah.
But they just don't, they don't exist in places that are conducive to having 100,000 people show up.
Right. You know, no, it's like a teeny, teeny town in Wisconsin in the middle of nowhere, basically,
right,
from everyone else's perspective. Right. And so they don't have. Yeah, it's a great track. It's just amazing. It's beautiful. But you're right. They don't really have kind of the infrastructure to support.
And I'm guessing that Watkins Glen is similar, being in upstate New York, that they just don't have.
Yeah.
Because that's what it's all about now. You know, everybody's picky. They need, no one's like camping in the mud in the infield. Everybody
right.
needs their 4-star hotel.
Well, unless you can set cars on fire, then yeah, we might be interested.
Might be interested in that.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So back in 1981, it is basically the
yeah,
same as it is today.
There's only 1,800 people in Watkins Glen. It's a town of 2,000.
Oh, that is
people.
A teeny,
it's a
teeny
tiny
town.
Place. They just can't
okay.
support
that
it.
That makes perfect sense.
They just can't.
It's just like Road America, then.
Yeah.
That's interesting. All right. So 1981, F1 doesn't have a home in the U.S. for their final race. And so they're looking to the biggest destinations and the most glamorous, glitzy, and showy locations to bring the most crowds. And when it comes to glitz and shows, there's no place in the U.S. like clip 3, which you're about to play.
I'm going to try. Oh, no, I am not. I'm not playing that. It's enough of that, right? Viva Las Vegas. All right, that's enough of that.
Yes, that was perfect. Okay. So before we get into it, let's talk about our sponsor, PetroBox, Chris. PetroBox is a monthly service made specifically for the automotive enthusiast. This isn't Jelly of the Month Club, Chris. Each month, they carefully select items, including tools, detailing supplies, apparel, garage gear, stickers, and publications to be sent right there to your doorstep. It's curated selection of the latest, greatest gear in the industry. And there's actually two different levels of subscription to choose from. You have the PetroBox Basic, which costs less than $20 a month. And the PetroBox Premium gets you even more gear for $39.95 a month. Check them out where?
MyPetrolBox.com.
And you can always use that code OVERCREST at checkout, all caps. All of our codes are OVERCREST, all caps. That'll get you $6 off your first month.
Viva
okay.
Las Vegas.
All right. Is that you trying to do that?
Yeah, yeah,
or are you
I'm
just trying to turn it off?
DJ.
The remix. Yeah. You're a terrible DJ.
It's
okay, so
well,
it's no
it's
surprise.
All about the medium being supplied to me is not
good. Hey, this is great. Look at all these multimedia sound effects that I'm giving you.
Yeah.
It's a fun story, Chris. Come on.
It is.
All right. Well,
we'll see.
It's no surprise. Hey, that Bernie Ecclestone.
You know what's a little bit of a gamble?
What?
Your hair today.
You're not a fan? See, again, most of our listeners do just listen, right? But you can go over to youtube.com
yeah, you
or Spotify
that hair is.
And see all sorts of the visual that you are obviously missing. All right, is that better?
I don't know, dude.
Much better. Some people have said I look like Jimmy Neutron. You remember that Nickelodeon show?
I do.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. So F1, interested in bringing the show to Vegas.
Wasn't Jimmy Neutron like a brilliant child?
Yes, that's
okay,
me.
So it's not you.
Yeah, that's totally me. As it turned out, Vegas already had experiences with motor racing, Chris. Back in the 1950s, a bankrupt horse track had been converted to a motorsport track to lure in would-be gamblers, as is exactly what Vegas is based on. So the precedent was set, and in 1965, the mega casino, the Stardust Hotel and Casino, took things to the next level and started construction of the Stardust International Raceway.
Ooh.
The flat 3-mile, 13-turn road course attracted actually a ton of racing attention itself, hosting the season finale of the Can-Am Championship in 1966, along with many champ car races, which, if you may know, was the precursor to the Indy League. In addition to numerous NHRA drag racing events, it was actually a fairly successful track in its own right. But here's where things get kind of interesting. It should come as no surprise that Vegas, as we talked about, has a fairly illicit history. The Neon City has inextricably been linked to the mafia since the 1940s. And when it came to motor racing, the mob was all in. Author Randall Cannon, who I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, has written several of these books on the subject, and said, quote, Stardust was developed by a few of the fellows with ties to the Cleveland mob, whose principal figure in Las Vegas was named Mo Dalitz. The story was that Dalitz was posted in Las Vegas by notorious East Coast gangster Meyer Lansky, who is a big guy, as I was looking into this, to oversee the take from the respective casinos, which, again, probably exactly like the movie, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to get his take. And so this Mo Dalitz was posted up.
Well, yeah, you don't want to have somebody mess with you. You got to be able to pay for the protection.
See, obviously. Yeah, bad things can happen, Chris.
They can, especially in a city like Vegas.
Yeah, who knows what's going to happen.
You better pay for
all the protection here, yeah? You wise guy. So the Stardust Casino itself had been financed in part by loans from the Teamsters Pension Fund. So the Teamsters is like a labor union of sorts, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And so they used their pension fund to pay for the casino. And so it's already like there's got to be tie-ins there, right? Yeah. Yeah, and just before this new track was completed, its ownership was then mysteriously transferred from the casino to a small corporation who happened to be headed by Mo Dalitz in the mob, who, oddly enough, became actually an acclaimed figure in Las Vegas for his philanthropic work. So he included building, like, hospitals and, like, all these things. So actually, Vegas citizens loved him, despite knowing, like, he's a mobster. They're like, yeah, at least he put some of the money back into the community.
Yeah, what
right?
a guy. Sounds like...
what a guy!
Sounds like Pablo Escobar, to be honest.
I suppose he did use a lot of that funding to prop up the economy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
A man of the people.
So while the Stardust Raceway was funded and operated by the mob, it was actually a fairly good track. Even Sir Jackie Stewart himself described it as a very nice circuit and one he looked forward to racing. Why is he Australian all of a sudden? Not quite sure, mate. Not quite sure.
Awful.
The Can-Am series held at the Stardust attracted the top teams and drivers from around the world, with the likes of Bruce McLaren, Mario Andretti, Mark Donahue, Dan Gurney, and all the who's who of racing in the 1960s.
Look at these Can-Am cars, dude. Look at this.
They're so cool. That's a Chaparral, isn't it? With the big wing?
Yeah, I think so. And there's McLaren's back here. I mean... Yeah. Look at this. Like right here, you can just see the freaking stack sticking out of this thing from 100 miles away.
Yep.
Oh, it's one of the things good. I love about going to the vintage races at Road America, seeing velocity stacks everywhere.
Dude, it's so good. Yeah. So despite the seeming success of the track, things were falling apart behind the scenes. The day after the USAC IndyCar race, the management group mysteriously just disbanded. Well, as it turned out, money had been continually siphoned off, disappearing into the books. Race weekends saw hundreds of thousands of dollars just go missing. A racetrack operated by criminals suddenly has money unaccounted for. I really wonder what was going on here.
So someone had to pay for this. Hold on. We got to pull this up again. I got to grab this.
Okay.
Look at this guy's shirt right here. This guy down here. Look at this dude's guy's shirt.
Okay.
On this.
That is quite the shirt.
This guy. Look at this guy. This is the dude with the money.
Yeah, you can tell. He's got his pressed white linen pants on.
This is the dude with
the racetrack. Jeez. So the track was disbanded in 1971 without ceremony, but that wouldn't be the last of the mafia's involvement in racing. So let's fast forward again to 1981. And so this is with Formula One flirting with the idea of bringing the Formula One grid to Sin City. The Eastern mob boss, Meyer Lansky, once again got in the fold. The official organization that was proposing to hold the race for the 1981 season was the Caesars Palace Hotel and Casino. The casino, it turned out, was operated by one Jerome Zarowitz, a very well-documented racketeer with deep connections to organized crime. So it's not just that the mob is getting their take here. It's that the casinos themselves are run by these guys.
Right.
So with a deal inked with Bernie Ecclestone in the casino, the Caesars Palace Grand Prix was born. Chris, why don't you go ahead and play clip number 5 there.
All right.
And we can hear about this track.
Today, Today is the day at Caesar's Palace. The cars are in their final warm-up session. The challenge, 75 laps around a 14-turn, 2.26-mile road course. A course that was built in less than 45 days at a cost of over $3 million. The world's finest road racing drivers are here.
This was to be the capstone event of the 1981 Formula season, serving as the final championship race. There's only one problem. Caesar's Palace didn't have a racetrack, and the city wouldn't let them shut down the surrounding streets like they're doing this year. So, in a downright strange turn of events, the last race of the 1981 Formula One season was held in a parking lot.
Oof.
I shit you not. Now, granted, the track was only supposed to be temporary, but they never got a chance to build a dedicated venue because the race was just such an utter and complete disaster. There are several problems with the world's premier racing league being set in a desolate, flat parking lot. The first of which was it was incredibly boring to watch.
Yeah, I'll pull up a picture so people can see the layout of the track here.
There was no variations in scenery. You know, there's no elevation changes. There's no technical challenges for the driver.
Over here, that's Caesar's Palace. And this is just a giant flat parking lot where everybody just drives back.
The parking lot, and then they took off some other, over there. So no variations in scenery, obviously. No elevation changes. No technical challenges for the drivers. It was devoid of any character as a flat piece of asphalt can be, because that's exactly what it was. And it lacked pretty much everything enjoyable about racing. So famed Formula One driver and team owner Dan Gurney, his wife was there, and described it perfectly that year. Quote, "It reminded me of my kitchen floor every morning. I go downstairs and I find my two boys playing those electronic video games. Deet, deet, deet." That's what this is. Atari for grownups. There is no drama in it. No life in this track. So, due to the limited amount of space,
why didn't we pull that up again? What do you want me to pull up?
Pull up again. You'll just look at that layout while I'm talking about it here.
All right.
Due to the limited amount of space, the circuit was a series of 14 corners crammed, turning back on themselves, appearing like some exposed intestine. Grandstands were very rudimentary and uncovered in the summer heat, but honestly, that didn't matter since a person could see the entire track from standing on the sidelines anyways, right? There's nothing up high. It's just completely flat. Another problem, though, was that the media coverage was terrible. Because there was no infield, photographers didn't have access to any of the corners, right? So there was really no good photography or coverage taken. But perhaps the worst part, at least for the drivers, was the complete lack of any reference points. Think about driving on this track, Chris.
Right.
The entire course was flat, it was narrow, and it was surrounded on all sides by 3-foot concrete barriers, devoid of any landmarks, as we talked about. There's no trees, no hills, not even grass, just an asphalt chute bordered by cement walls.
So there's no on the fifth tree in before
right.
turn
you can
six.
Start braking or yeah. like, you know, this is a passing zone where you can take advantage. There's literally all it is going around a go-kart track at the Mall of America, right?
Right.
All you see are these walls and you can't see up ahead any further either. So moreover, those tight turns were absolutely brutal on both the cars and the drivers. Go ahead and play clip 4 and we'll hear from one of the drivers that year.
The 1979 world champion, Jody Scheckter. Jody, this course is awfully tough on the driver.
Yes, I think it's especially tough because it goes the opposite way to the normal Grand Prix circuit. And the toughest part for the driver is his neck. The G-force and the heavy helmet makes his neck very tight, and the other muscle has been built up over the last Grand Prix.
So, you think of a normal Formula One course, or any road track out there, you know, it's like long stretches with maybe a chicane, and then there are tight corners, but it's not one after another, after another, after another. And you look at these corners, if you pull it up again, it's like you're talking like almost 180 degree switchbacks.
It just goes back and forth and back and forth.
So the driving conditions were so terrible that the race winner, who was a 29-year-old Brazilian by the name of Nelson Piquet, it's it's spelled Piquet. How do you pronounce that, Mr. Frenchman?
I don't know, man. Piquet.
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 Piquet. He was interviewed after the race as saying, quote, "When my crew gave me a sign saying 33 laps to go, I nearly stopped. I nearly died. My head was already going out of the car. I couldn't hold it upright against the Citroen Cripple Forces at that point."
Jesus.
"When he finally made it across the finish, he fainted from exhaustion and actually needed to be carried out from the car."
Did this have anything else to do with any other elements of the environment, like heat?
It was extremely hot. Yeah, it was extremely hot. And I'll get to it a bit later. What, believe it or not, they actually did this a second year.
What time of year was this happening? When was this? Do we know? I'll look.
Yeah, I had it written down. I think it was like August. I think it was really, really terrible times.
Jeez.
Yeah, when this Nelson Piquet, when he finally, when he's done and they carried him out of his car, it took him over 15 minutes to recover before being able to appear at the winner's podium. Jeez. Like, it was bad. Did you find the date for it? I found some really sweet t-shirts from back in the day that I wanted to buy, though.
Yeah, I bet you did.
It was like, Caesar's Palace Grand Prix. So, really, the only real racing excitement from the event was provided by the torturous conditions on the tires. Listen to this. Teams had a choice, as they do now, between different tire manufacturers. You could run either a Michelin or you could run a Goodyear that year. So, basically, one-third of the way into the 75-lap race, these Michelin-shod tired cars began pitting, while those using Goodyears just continued on, undeterred. Four of the leading cars had to come into the pits with their tires literally blistering from the heat and the rough asphalt.
Yeah, just imagine being the guy driving the car.
It's the super high G's that are making these drivers like pass out are also absolutely terrible on the tires. So if the racing venue was terrible, it was especially terrible for one Carlos Reutemann. Now, Carlos, he was a driver. And heading into this last race, Carlos and the winner, Nelson Piquet, were head-to-head in the point standings. But Carlos and Reutemann, they knew that the track was basically all wrong going into it. The evening before the race, Reutemann had stood by the huge Caesar's Palace fountain and hinted that he felt defeat coming. He said that this race has been added to the end of the original schedule, seemed to him a sort of omen that he wasn't destined to be world champion. Quote, "I have a nice book written about my career in Formula One at home in Argentina. And the only page I need to finish is the one in which I tell you about becoming a world champion." However, on only the third lap, Carlos Reutemann reported that his gearbox was failing and it would cost him the championship. Hmm. After the race, a mechanic reached in Reutemann's car and ran the gear shift through its pattern. "I think it was just completely knacked," its mechanic said. The gearbox looked perfect.
I wonder, did it? What happened? What?
He wigged himself out, and he was just so down about this track being so terrible that I think it's just like, think of the mental as well as the physical toil on these guys. I don't know,
man.
It was just a really interesting anecdote that here he is sitting in front of, like, this would be the movie scene, right? This would be the scene from the movie that is going to be made where the guy's just sitting in front of Caesar's Palace and he's like, "It's a bad omen. Like, this track sucks. I'm not gonna win."
He just psyched himself out.
And somehow he just psyched himself out. Yeah. The 1981 Caesar's Palace Grand Prix was the saddest and most bizarre race ever to be held in the history of Formula One. But it wasn't over yet. No, due to contract agreements, the 1982 season saw the Grand Prix return to Las Vegas for the exact same race, with the exact same track layout.
Hold on a second. I want to show you this picture. I want you to tell me which one of these guys is in the mob. Look at this.
Oh, my God. Look at the short guy with the curly hair that this just dude, looks like Joe Pesci. Right staring here. Down the girl.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. The photo. He's just staring down the girl creepily.
They've got like a gold-plated jackhammer, too.
Right, to work on the track.
Yeah. And then they've got a car there with another babe in there. She looks like she's straight out of Caesar's Palace or something.
Yes, she does.
So does this guy. Look at this dude.
And there's Caesar. There's Caesar right there.
Yeah, this dude right here. This guy. This dude's is this. Look at his tie. His short little, like.
Oh, yeah. This dude. Oh, yeah. You got to rock the short tie.
Yeah, that guy's it.
That, yeah, that's the man. Monster. So I can't believe that they then returned the second year, and you would think that, oh, we got to, you know, we'll make improvements. Nope. Same exact track, same problems.
Improvements cost money,
same
Jake.
Layout. Yeah, well, here's the interesting point about money. As if it weren't having enough marks against it, it turns out the track wasn't even profitable. Both races brought absolutely tiny crowds, meaning it was actually a huge loss for the casino. So when it came down to it, you're using the car parking lot.
Hey, Jake, it's August. Do you want to, you know, we can either go into the air conditioning buildings and do what we're here to do in Vegas, which is gamble, or do you want to go?
Let's go do that.
Let's go, or we could go sit in the heat and watch a bunch of drivers that we've never heard of because there's no internet.
Go sit in a 120 degree parking lot under the sun.
Nobody knows who any of these people are back then.
No.
Nobody.
Exactly.
This is a European sport, essentially.
Exactly. Which is why it makes sense. Formula One wanted to bring it to the States, but it didn't do well. And clearly, the nefarious characters who were kind of running and promoting this didn't spend the money on promotion, you know. But what's crazy, so, okay, let's say we're going to hold this race in our parking lot of Caesar's Palace, this mega casino. If no one comes to the race, what else is the problem? No one can come to the casino either because there's no parking lot.
So no one's gambling. Got it.
By using the parking lot as a makeshift racetrack, none of the casino's regular gambling clientele were able to park, causing huge losses in revenue on top of the losses that the construction of the track made. It truly was an absolute abysmal failure.
That would be called a debacle.
That is quite the debacle. And I mean, we could get deeper into kind of the mob connection and what really happened with this. I really want to get this author on next week. I've reached out to him
to
see if we can't. Yeah. So, I mean, there's kind of your intro of what the heck is going on in Vegas or was going on with motorsport in Vegas. I'm hoping this year, 2023, doesn't have as many mob connections and perhaps is a little better. There is an interesting photo of the old Caesar's Palace track overlaid onto this year's street course.
Yep.
And it's fascinating. And it shows just how crammed that original Caesar's Palace track
was. Well, it probably had to be, I'm imagining it had to be a certain length. And they only had X amount of space. So they had to just turn it into, it looks like somebody just dropped a bowl of spaghetti on the ground and then they, you know.
Google Caesar's Palace racetrack, and there's an aerial view. See if you can find it for those that are watching.
I have found it. Hold on.
So what's crazy? So yeah, we know of course the proposed track for this year's Formula One,
which honestly
it's not that interesting of a course. There's a huge straightaway, like a bunch of huge straightaways. This is going to be a super fast track this year. But then it's hilarious when you see it compared right there to what the 1981 and 82 track was at Caesar's Palace. So that puts it into perspective. Like, this is what a course should properly be, and that's what they did.
I'm looking at this.
Literally.
You can see my mouse, right? You can see my mouse moving around?
Yes, I can.
Okay. So I'm looking at this course. I feel like it should go like this. It should have came back in here. And look at like this. This, like,
you want to go through another parking lot?
This is not a parking lot. This is like a little town area.
Yeah, he wants more corners.
I want more corners. Look at this.
I agree. A lot of my reading that wasn't very interesting, and I didn't cover it, but there's so much bureaucracy about getting permits to shut down streets.
Oh, I'm sure.
And like revenue loss for businesses, even though you're bringing in tons of fans. Like, well, if you shut down the street, people can't get places. So those look like little residential townhouse areas or something back where you're pointing.
Yep.
So I can't imagine they would get permits to shut any of that down. Like, these are literally just the main streets that they got. And it looks like that curved area there does actually go through some sort of a parking lot.
Yeah, there's parking lot.
What was a parking lot.
For sure. I don't know. This track doesn't look, I'm not super like, ooh, you know.
It'll be interesting.
It's all going to be DRS passing on this straight. This is such a long straight. It's going to be very fast, and it's just going to be
very fast.
With the DRS, hard braking into whatever.
I guarantee you the visual that you're going to see over and over and over again is in front of Bellagio's fountain with the cars passing each other.
Yeah, that's right here. Yep. Yay.
But yeah, that's the crazy, absurd history of Formula One in Vegas prior to this year.
Well, I hope you can get the author on. I think it'd be really interesting to hear from him. Yeah. Nice job, Jake. I appreciate it. It's a good time. Good, yeah, good hanging
you.
Out.
Hopefully you enjoyed that one. What do we have going on next week, Chris? Maybe talking to an author. We got some news.
Talking to an author. I've been talking to one of the dudes from Patina Collective to come talk about grandpa cars.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So he's a Mercedes guy.
He's a Mercedes guy. They have a huge museum and a huge collection. What's interesting is that when you look at the collection of cars that they have, it's a lot of like AMG style stuff and a lot of cars that look like they had a lot of cocaine that was done on, like Brabus, stuff like that. And I don't think any grandpas ever drove any of those. I think it was all Sultans.
No, definitely not. Well, yeah, or like you said, drug lords. Yeah. The Brabus stuff or the early AMG stuff when it was pre-Mercedes.
Pre-merger, yeah.
Yeah.
So I like, you know what? I like talk to him. I want to see if we can learn some more about that stuff.
That would be cool. I should save this for news or something, but I realized the other day the one Mercedes that I do love and my favorite Mercedes, which is the Unimog. I do love that one too, yes. But as a model, the Unimog.
The Unimog is quite Mercedes. Cool. I think it would be pretty badass if you could put a different transmission in it so you could actually drive it, because there's I think they're the gearbox.
Well, they
so
have
short.
Like they go like 45 miles portal axle hubs too, like it's gear reduction. And so a portal, it's an off-road thing, so like you have your straight axle right coming across here, I have a visual, and then at the hub, instead of just going to the wheel, they have this huge gear reduction box that's vertical, so you can move the wheel down further and have more torque gear reduction.
And then
so
you have more ground clearance.
Ground clearance is the big thing, correct? So that also reduces your speed.
All right.
Yeah.
I appreciate it, man. We will see you next week.
Take care.